Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's certainly been a privilege for Arlene and me to be in your company this week. We've certainly had looked forward to coming, and we have thrilled at being...
Because you're wrong. I mean, I did laugh at your comment, but that was just because I have had a long day and just felt like laughing. Okay?
All right.
Okay, I think we got Charles back, speaking of laughing. Charles, are you there?
Paul, I know you can't hear me, but Paul, if you could hear me, would you believe me if I told you you was a...
I can't hear him.
Well, you was a bragging Alabama moron, and I was going to give you
I'm going to go get a new set of headphones, Paul.
Alex, can you...
Paul, I know you can't hear me, but...
I can't hear him. I'm not going through that again today.
I'm going to get some new headphones.
That was yesterday's news. Chris is next. Hey, Chris.
How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing okay for a Tuesday.
And that last caller called in about 9 more. He gets good reception in that bar, don't he?
He sure does.
Yeah. Anyway, Paul, I have a suggestion. I think it'll fix your Charles problem if you'll hear me out.
Okay.
I think I know why everybody tired of listening to him call us, because it's pretty much a repeat season of what he did last year, talking all the smack about them winning the national championship and Iron Bowl, and when it came down to it, and what happened. Everybody's waiting for him to call in and take his medicine. What did he do? He quit calling the show.
He did. He resigned from the show after the Vanderbilt game.
After declaring himself caller of the year.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he came back. He did come back, yeah.
That's been revoked anyway, but... Anyway, I was suggesting this year he's doing the same thing. And why don't you make him put something on the line? And if Alabama wins that Iron Bowl, if he's willing to do it, which I don't think he is because all he does is talk. He never wants to back it up because he knows Auburn's going to lose. But I know he's been up to your show before. Get him to come up to your show wearing nothing but Alabama gear if they lose to Alabama. And if Auburn wins, he can get you or one of the main callers that's Alabama fans come up there in Auburn stuff. But I guarantee if you put that in front of him, he won't do it.
I agree with you. Okay, well, thank you.
I'll tell him next time he calls, if that line works, Paul.
Okay, yeah. I think we have got it worked out. We have just talked to AT&T and Charles from Real Town. Charles, are you there now?
I can't hear you, Paul. But if you could hear me, Paul.
We can hear you now, Charles.
I'd like to tell you.
We can hear him now.
I think
loud
you're
and clear,
bragging
Paul.
Out about a moron, and what you've done to me yesterday, you're going to catch it.
No, I'm not, Charles.
Paul, if you could hear me, this is what...
Charles, let me tell you something, Charles.
You get fired and shamed from Santa...
Charles, let me tell you something, okay? Can you hear me now?
F-Bomb is ready to take on the world.
Hate me today.
More of Feinbaum coming up.
Hate me tomorrow. Puff Daddy is next. Hey there, Puff.
Hey, can I ask you, I need to go on 3 topics, and one of them's there, Chucky. You remember when we was going to the fair as a kid and we'd pay a quarter to see the freaks?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Did you go back and rescue one? But, hey, Paul, and I got to hit Alabama. You remember when the best thing we ever thought of having a mile more when he got run over on the sideline in the Colorado game?
Yep, I sure do.
Something got rattled that day, I think. And about the textbooks, did you ever think you'd spend so much time talking about athletes and textbooks?
No, I mean it's I think it's positive that Alabama is having an issue with players trying to get more learning.
And I can't think about the Aubies are, you know.
Now, did the NCAA come out today and announce that they were investigating Auburn?
They don't have anything to investigate because you remember Brent Fullwood and James Brooks never did get their textbooks. But I'll talk to you later, my man.
Thank you very much. Yeah, you bet. Okay, Kyle is up next. Hey, Kyle.
Hey, Paul. How are you and John doing today?
Doing great.
Fine.
All right. If anybody's listening, stay inside. It's too hot outside. And I think that first caller you had, I think he's been outside just a little too long. I got to agree with you, Paul. I mean, Mal Moore, I've met him. He is a nice guy. And, yeah, he's done a lot for charity work and raising money for the school, but it's time for him to step aside. And the question I want to ask you and John is, why, I don't know why they don't see this as a good opportunity to go, okay, Mal, let's put you in a position up here where you're not going to be, you're just going to be talking to people, help raise money, and why they just don't go, hey, you know what, Ozzie Newsome, would you like the AD job?
Well, I mean, why don't they go after? Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, the whole Ozzie Newsome story is, I think, a side issue. I'm just getting a little tired of this praise without thought. And I blame Robert Whitnow. I've been very high on him, but he opened the door yesterday, and I really just cannot believe what he said. It was really unbecoming of a man of his intelligence to say something that is so blatantly untrue.
Well, and you're right, and I think it like you said, it kind of does insult the intelligence of everybody. I mean, even Alabama fans I know that are hardcore Alabama fans laughed at that comment. We're like, this is just completely, utterly ridiculous. I mean, does Mal Moore have integrity? But you know
what happens, though, Kyle? And he just came out of a board of trustees meeting, and when you hang around those people, you get silly stupid. You know what I'm talking about, John?
I do.
I mean, you get a bunch of do-gooders who most of whom have never worked a day in their life, and they just start saying things that are silly, stupid, and not in the real world.
Well, that board has always been subject to criticism on those grounds.
Yeah, finest St. John the Fourth.
The Fourth.
The Fourth. He is the president of the board, and Mr. Finest St. John the Fourth. How did he miss a name? Doesn't this guy have a middle? Does he have a middle name? Finest St. John the Fourth, or is St. John the middle name?
I'm thinking it's probably Finest St. Corruption John the Fourth.
He said, "We are lucky to have Mal Moore." If you look at the trajectory of the athletic department over the past few years, it has gone nowhere but up. Yeah, nowhere
money.
But up in terms of NCAA sanctions
and making money. They made a lot of money down there.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah, they do. But that's the thing. To me, saying that we're lucky to have Mal Moore is like...
I mean, Mr. St. John, that is an embarrassing statement.
Oh, yeah. That's like somebody that's being thrown in the river by the mob with their feet tied to concrete going, boy, we're real lucky they used rope instead of chains. It's like, it doesn't matter. You're still underwater, and you still need to get out of the situation. I don't know. It's just, this is not... I mean, this is the kind of stuff Alabama's got to knock it off and go, look, okay... We appreciate what he did. We appreciate that he was a coach under Bear Bryant. But let's get into the 21st century and let's start getting
ahead.
And by
the way, he wasn't a very good one.
And by the way, getting rid of him isn't going to solve the problem. It depends on who you put in there in his place. I'm just talking about competency. And I suggested the other day that Mal should gently and gracefully head off. I mean, I don't think you just ought to walk in there and bludgeon the guy. That's not what we're talking about here. But
right.
But for Moore and this board to make such fools out of themselves. By the way, Dr. Witt and this board said the very same thing 3 years ago about another person. Do you remember who it was, Kyle?
Yes, Mike Shula.
Dr. Witt, I still have this quote at home, said, "We hope that Mike Shula will become the next Bear Bryant. We think we have that much confidence in him. We're giving him this new contract with a $4 million buyout, by the way, another one of Mal Moore and Robert Witt's contraptions, and this board of trustees. Just say that we're competent that we're going to win this appeal. We're not blaming Mal Moore for it, but don't go out on the limb. This is one of the dumbest statements I've ever seen since George Bush said, "Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job."
Well, and don't forget, he also probably said the same thing to Mike Price. He just probably said it in private.
Well, right, as Price was heading down to Pensacola, he said, "You're doing a great job, Mike. Here's $2 from me." We'll take a short break. Back after this. Next. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Paul.
Hi there.
How many times has Alabama been in trouble since their last national championship?
This would be the four times in front of the NCAA Committee on Infractions.
And how many under Mal Moore?
That would be two.
Just two?
Yeah.
What was the athletic director's name that hired Mike DeBose? Bob Baccarath,
yeah.
Okay.
Bottom line, Bob.
Yeah.
What? You have to explain it to me. How, besides getting in trouble with the NCAA, what else has he done so terribly wrong?
Okay, where do you want to start? He mismanaged the negotiations with Dennis Franchione badly.
Yes, I
did. He hired, after due diligence, Mike Price. He had considered Jim Levitt, but there was some speculation that Levitt, who I think was divorced at the time, had a girlfriend somewhere, so he ruled him out, even though he was a very good football coach, and hired Mike Price because he knew him from somewhere. And it wasn't so much that he hired Mike Price, it was the fact that Mal Moore was the last person in Tuscaloosa to hear that Mike Price was out every single night hustling co-eds.
Yeah.
He never dealt with that at all. Never called him in. He claims he did, but the proof's in the pudding. He allowed that to blow up. And then he hired Mike Shula. And then not only did he hire Mike Shula, he was an enabler of Mike Shula.
Yeah, he gave him
that new contract, which was one of the worst. Mike Shula couldn't have gotten another job in the country, and he put a $4 million. And I blame Witt, too, by the way, and that board of trustees. Yeah. They all. And on top of that, the total mismanagement of Mark Gottfried.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Giving Gottfried a million-dollar contract and then not firing Gottfried a year or two ago because he just didn't think it was worth paying him off. I mean, just all kinds of things in addition to the two most penal, which are the NCAA matters.
Plus, the baseball program is disarray.
And
Jim Wells left, and he talked him into coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even getting into minor sports.
Oh, I understand that,
yeah.
but that's to a lot of us Alabama people. Alabama was going to the College World Series regularly, mm-hmm. hadn't
right.
been a long
in
time.
In the 90s, we were.
It's a mess, and I think Coach Moore's got some responsibility to bear for that.
Well, you sold me, guys.
But you hear that he hired Nick Saban. Well, don't forget he offered the job to Rich Rodriguez first.
That's very true. You sold me on it, Paul. Yeah, long-time listener and first time I've ever called your show. I love it.
Thank you very much.
All right, you guys take care.
I was being pretty quiet about this until Robert Witt and Mr. Finest Beauregard St. John
IV,
Louis the 18th, opened up his yap yesterday.
Louis the 18th, I'm sorry. Very unprofessional to laugh at the host. Hey, I heard that Tammy fessed up that she had the hots for Pat Dye.
She did. Yeah, I don't blame her. Who doesn't? Patsy is next. Hey, Patsy.
Hi, Paul.
Hi there.
Hi, John.
How are you, Patsy?
I'm pretty good. Listen,
hot,
guys,
hot where you are?
Huh?
Is it hot where you are?
It's always hot where Patsy is.
Thank you.
Oh, Paul knows me so well. Anyway, you had to be living in a cave not to know that Mal Moore needed to be replaced. You know, Saban sort of saved his job, I think. But before that, his hiring looked a lot to be desired. As an Auburn fan, I really didn't give a good rip. But as a football fan, I thought for a long time that he needed to go. His last hire was a good one, but the only thing is about Saban. Saban doesn't know anything about loyalty. And if the kitchen gets hot, his butt will be out.
Well, it was such a great hire that Nick Saban can walk away with no penalty at any time.
It's sort of the reverse of the Mike Shula business.
Wait a minute. How is that?
Because there's no buyout in his contract.
Whoa.
I didn't want to upset Mr. Saban.
Well, oh, isn't that terrible? Not to upset me. When did college coaches become kings?
Well,
instead of a working man like everybody else.
Well, Nick Saban is the first king of a university. He's maybe a crown prince. I don't know. He's royalty, whatever.
Does he make himself that, or is it the fans that make him that?
Well, with Nick Saban, once you sign him up, you have to be on board. There's no dissension.
I mean,
he's the Robert Mugabe of college coaches.
He's the one of college coaches. John, what did you say?
Paul said it first.
Well, actually, I'm going to claim I didn't say it.
Okay. The Robert Mugabe of college.
Well, I mean, you're either for him or you're dead.
Or you're against him. Right.
No, you're not against him for long. You're out of there.
Yeah, but if he thinks he's untouchable, he's very, very wrong. Very wrong.
I don't know.
Who's going to touch him?
Nobody is untouchable.
Other than Albies, who's going to touch him? People are happy with him.
Let's see if there's another infraction of the rules by someone. Let's see how untouchable he is then.
Well, I don't think, he didn't have anything to do with that. He did the right thing.
Well,
he found out about it, and he suspended guys who were involved in it. She says he'll be gone if there's another violation. I mean, if he has something to do with it, he might.
Honey, he's the king.
The
it
king?
It all goes back to the leader. He is responsible for
Coach Moore is the leader.
Well, Patsy, technically, thanks for the call. It started before Nick Saban.
Oh, yeah.
Rod. Chad Scott was with us the other day. He took off on some of the attitudes that permeate the Alabama airwaves. The average fan will call in a program like this or yours or anyone else's and say, I don't care how he treats the fans. I don't care how he treats the media. I don't care how he treats the fans. I just want him to win.
But when you're saying, I don't care how someone treats me, that means you have incredibly low self-confidence. That tells me you have incredibly low self-esteem. You know, when Nick Saban goes out and essentially blames Alabama fans for his team's loss in the Sugar Bowl, you don't have a problem with the way your coach treats people? You know, Nick Saban is still kind of a classic bully, and if fans don't care that they're treated bad by their head coach, they need to look themselves in the mirror.
Wow.
Chad Scott earlier, he's not still calling in, is he, Alex? This is now 2 days. See what's going on. Charles is next from Real Town.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Charles is next from Real Town.
Can you hear me, Paul?
Could not hear him. Misty is next. Hello, Misty. Hey, Misty.
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Okay. I'm doing fine, Misty. How are you?
I'm just fine. I was just calling to comment on Patsy. I think she needs to be a little more concerned about what's going on in Auburn instead of what's going on in T-Town. I think, you know, Nick Saban's got it under control, and all the fans love him, and I don't think she needs to be worried about this right now.
Yes, she seems to be, though.
Yeah.
Well, that's very logical, Misty, but how many Auburn fans do you hear calling up about Auburn as opposed to calling up about Alabama?
They're so worried about Alabama and Nick Saban until they can't get their own program going because of that. So they need to just, chill out and try to get something going down there so they can win a few ball games this year.
Sounds pretty good. Well, thank you. Okay,
thank
Charles is next. Charles?
Oh.
Charles is next. Go ahead, Charles.
Oh, you can hear me. I know you can. You better talk to me.
Charles is next. Go right ahead, Charles.
I'm finna come up there.
Can you hear him, Paul?
Charles, you there?
Oh, fine, Bob. You better get them phone lines fixed.
I do not hear.
Yes, you do. The problem with you, it ain't the phone line.
Alex, can you?
You messing with me?
Can you punch in Charles's button a little bit in there?
Oh, fine, Bob.
I don't hear him. No, I do not hear.
Yes, you do.
Do not hear him in here.
I can hear myself talking on the radio.
Not only the best in sports, the Radio Personality of the Year. Presented by Alabama Broadcasters Association. This is the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network.
Is Patsy back? She wants to rebut. Okay. What's the deal, Patsy?
I need to straighten some out with Misty.
You and Misty?
Me and Misty, and I hope she's still listening. I hope Misty is not any indication of her brain. But when I called in, I believe y'all were talking about Saban, Dr. Witt, and Mal Moore. Now, I could have called in and told you what I was going to fix for supper, but that wouldn't have had anything to do with what y'all were talking about.
What are you fixing for supper?
So Miss Misty, Misty wants to quit, she needs to quit being paranoid. You know, right now, what's going on at Alabama is the topic of the day. Auburn will be later. But right now, they are in the spotlight. So, Misty, straighten up.
Really glad you called
back.
Good
for you, Patsy.
That was great stuff.
Right on.
Mm, wow. Al is in Meridian, Mississippi. Hello, Al.
Hey, Paul. Good afternoon. And enjoying the show today. Just a quick comment about, I'll be really happy when football season gets here because this show has really taken a dive in the last few days with the characters. I think they'll all be forgotten when football season starts, and Mal Moore will be, of course, a hero about 7 or 8 weeks into the season when Alabama's undefeated and vying for another national championship, as we all hope they will be and expect that they will be. And Nick Saban will be another, will start saying that he's the best thing to happen to Alabama since since whatever. But
since Mal Moore.
Yeah, I know it's slow time in the summer, Paul, but my goodness, I wish we could talk about something else. But I appreciate the show, and I'm listening, and I appreciate it so much.
Thank you. I always like when a guy calls up and blasts the topic and then doesn't offer a new one.
Well, you know, I'd like to know what he would like to hear. You know, Pat and I have...
You think he's getting tired of the character callers?
The and back and forth?
I think he's getting tired of people like Charles from Real Town. Hey, Charles.
Hey, Paul.
Charles, go right ahead.
I can't hear him, Paul. Oh, there he is.
Go ahead, Charles. We got you now.
About dad blame time.
We got you. We got him.
I don't believe there's been nothing wrong with him phone line. Something wrong with you. Y'all don't get this mess straightened out, they're going to be calling me Straight Jacket Charles from Real Town. About to run me crazy. Can't hear me? Go ahead with it.
I was about to talk to him, too. Guy picked the wrong time to hang up. We had just about gotten the audio sound working.
I think the Real Town International Telephone Company is having problems.
Charles, George is next. Hey, George.
Hey, Paul. Hey, John. How are y'all today?
Very well.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
The
new name of the show.
Do a commercial, maybe. But you were rivaling the Jerry Springer show earlier in the week, and glad to see we're back to Feinbaum. I heard no bell after Chris and Jim, so
yeah, no.
I knew I was on the right station. But NCAA, back in the glory days, it stood for Never Comes Around Alabama. Since those days, it seems like it's now camped at Alabama.
You're right. Now, there was a time when Alabama was a sacred cow.
Oh, yes, untouchable under the Bryant regime, obviously. But it seems like our biggest enemy is ourselves for self-reporting. And I wonder if the NCAA just wants to keep their boot on our throat because we are, for whatever reason, seems to be one of the only programs out there that self-reports and gets any type of penalty whatsoever. I was just wondering your opinion on that. And one other thing, Paul, Mrs. Price she partied a lot more than Mr. Coach Price in Tuscaloosa. She was out and about quite a bit more.
Was she really?
Oh, yes.
I never knew that.
Oh, yes. So I think it may be a West Coast contest there, maybe. I'm not sure, but it's different. But, you know, it's just that I think with this appeal we're trying to say, please get your boot off our throat. We're trying to move forward.
Thank you. I didn't know the missus was out.
I didn't either. I didn't even know she had moved to Tuscaloosa.
I didn't either.
I thought she was still out at Washington State.
I thought she had, or wherever.
Washington State?
It's news to me. Stephen is next. Hey, Stephen.
Hey. The deal with Mal, he's kind of been a fundraiser. He's kind of been in that role for the past few years with the stadium and with the upgrades and this and that. And the way I look at it, if you need somebody to do fundraising, since he's been doing that for a while, you know, kind of let him do the fundraising, because, you know, most of the people who he's getting money from are alums. They're, you know, old money from Alabama. And since this has turned into a business now, get somebody in there who can be an everyday AD who has, you know, business marks, like, you know, a GM, you know, someone who can run it like that, and then, you know, keep Mal as, you know, fundraising and that only, because it seems like he's getting more caught up in that and not in the everyday runnings of the athletic department.
Yeah, I hear what you're talking about there. Okay. Well, I'll pass that along to Dr. Witt. Thank you. Matt is next in Calera. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. I got two questions for you. First one's a hypothetical. If Nick Saban was AD, in your mind, do you think there would be an absolute guarantee that there would be certain members in the athletic department that would lose their job tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that's a guarantee.
Okay, all right. And my next question is, could there ever evolve a power struggle between Saban and Mal Moore? I mean, I don't – everything as far as working relationship looks like it's on the up and up. Looks like Nick Saban's basically idea is, I've got enough things to deal with to worry about that. But if push ever came to shove, could that ever evolve and happen, in your opinion?
Well, I don't – see, I don't think it would ever come to that. I think the real issue could be the power struggle to succeed Mal Moore.
Okay.
I think Mal Moore has been around intercollegiate athletics long enough. He knows the most important thing he has to do in his job is to keep Nick Saban happy.
Absolutely.
And I think he understands that.
Yeah. Oh, I have one more thing I want to ask you. Dealing with Mal Moore, if the powers that be that are over Mal Moore, because there's always this impression there's a bunch of moles in the athletic department,
mm-hmm.
that would sabotage the university if their jobs were ever threatened. And I always thought Mal Moore was just a nice guy that, you know, just did not want to deal with this. But more and more, it sounds like he might be a co-conspirator.
No, I don't think that is true. I may think Mal Moore ought to consider retirement, but I don't think he is a rebel rouser or a co-conspirator. I think Mal Moore doesn't involve himself in that kind of thing. There are a lot of people down there who do, and there has been a power struggle going on for years about who would replace Mal Moore and who would keep their jobs and who shouldn't. And all I'm saying is I don't think Nick Saban has a problem with Moore. I just think Nick Saban has a problem with the general incompetence of that athletic department. Because he's not someone that stands for incompetence very easily. And I think there is less dead wood today than 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but there's still plenty of dead wood. We will continue with more of your phone calls. Charles from Realtown is next. Just kidding.
Log on to FindBomb.com for show podcasts, interviews, and Paul's latest columns. FindBomb.com. Log on to FindBomb.com for show podcasts, interviews, and Paul's latest columns. FindBomb.com.
The enemy over there. They're not your friends.
You don't go over there and shake his smile, hug their neck.
Let's knock them on their backs, butt them in the mouth, knock their ass in the dirt. That's what we got to do.
You got to stop that buddy ball. Smash everybody in the mouth. Take the running backs to the stands. Run up in the stands and slap their mama.
Legends are made, and most college football coaches fired. The Deep South's leading opinion maker, the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network. From today's headlines to tomorrow's top stories, this is the South's most listened to and credible source for sports, the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network. To be part of the program, call 741-1005 or toll free at 1-877-569-1005 or email the show at feinbaumnet@yahoo.com. Now, named by Sports Illustrated as one of America's top 12 sports shows, the South Sports Authority, Paul Feinbaum.
Good afternoon. Welcome to another week here as summer has officially begun and the U.S. Open is finally over. It went into a Monday for the first time in 26 years, not including playoffs, and it ended about an hour and a half ago, and once again, Phil Mickelson has come up short in the National Championship of Golf, his fourth runner-up finish, a brilliant charge by Mickelson, tying for the lead with an eagle late in the round, but he could not hold on. And Lucas Glover, that's right, Lucas Glover, did you have him in your office pool, has won the U.S. Open at Bethpage. We'll talk about it this afternoon. A lot of other things going on, and we want to get your phone calls in here pretty quickly before we get to some guests at 866-765-7285, 741-9450. A lot going on, but before we get too deep into the show, I do want to talk about golf for a minute and get some commentary on what was an extraordinary final round, final couple of days of the U.S. Open. Eric Williamson joins us. He is the director of golf at Shoal Creek. He came to Birmingham a couple of years ago from the very prestigious Quail Hollow Club in Charlotte, and he joins us to get some reaction to Lucas Glover. Eric, good afternoon. Hope all is well.
Paul, how are you?
I am doing well. Who is Lucas Glover?
Well, he's a talented player, that's for sure.
He really is.
Yeah, he is. He's actually from South Carolina, as most of you know, but he's been talented all his life. I actually played in some junior tournaments with him and against him, and have known him for quite a few years. But he's a talented guy and great ball striker. Went to a great school, Clemson University. But it's really no surprise to me. What is a surprise to me is how well David Duvall played, which was good to see. And then, of course, Phil Mickelson, that was another disaster for him. But, you know, Lucas is, he's a talented guy who's won a lot in his career. And I think it was just a matter of time before he broke through on the national scene. He's won one time, but, having a U.S. Open under his belt, it's got to help his confidence. And, I think we'll see him for years to come.
Eric, let's talk first about Mickelson, and I think too many people who don't understand golf will look at this and go, well, it looks like Mickelson blew it again, but he got himself in position with an eagle, and he did not hold on down the stretch, although he came pretty close. Your assessment of Phil Mickelson and his day in New York?
Well, I think what stands out is the teeth that Bethpage showed, you know, for the first 3 days, it really didn't show much, the difficulty of it, because of how soft it was. And when greens got a little quicker, the rough got a little higher, shots got tougher around the greens got firmer. But Phil, it's just amazing to me, how talented he is, and, you know, what he's going through right now is just more impressive of the talent that he showed today. But I was really surprised. I thought when he tied for the lead and made an eagle that he would come back and down the stretch, I thought it was his time, especially with what his wife's going through and everything. But he's just a talented individual that, again, he'll win his U.S. Open, that's for sure, one day. But, you know, Lucas showed a lot of pizzazz out there, and he's a talented guy, but I think Phil's day will come.
We're chatting with Eric Williamson, who is the director of golf at Shoal Creek, a golf course that has hosted three majors, two PGAs and a U.S. amateur. Last summer, of course, had the U.S. junior amateur. Eric, of all the great stories, the most mysterious was David Duval, who was the number one player in the world 10 years ago, won the British Open 8 or 9 years ago. And then to say he fell off the face of the earth would be generous. What happened to his game, and how do you think he was able to get it back to where he came pretty close today? Actually, was tied for the lead late.
Well, it's a remarkable story. I mean, he's 882nd in the world, I think, and
I think I'm ahead of him.
You're close, Paul, and you're getting there, right?
Absolutely.
We all know that.
I'm in the top 3 million right now, just in Alabama.
That's better than most, Paul. No, his game, it's just amazing what he's gone through. You know, here he was on top of the world at one time, and I think everybody talks about fitness nowadays, and he started winning and winning a lot, and then he got in really, really good shape, started kind of getting out of his routine and out of his body type, which changed his swing a little bit. And then he started tinkering with other swing coaches, and his confidence went down, started losing. And I think as well he got sick. He went through a spell of sickness, which really hurt him. But it just shows you how much confidence plays a role in golf, because he lost his confidence completely, and he kept talking about how his confidence was coming back gradually. I think he's gone back to his old swing coach, Puggy Blackman, and he's, as we can see, he's put his weight back on, which is good to see. He's fat and happy and got a good family, and it seems like he's back in the game and here to stay. I hope so.
Let me ask you about the pressure of Lucas Glover. You know him. You've played golf with him. He's sitting there, standing there on the 18th hole with a two-shot lead. And, you know, it looks easy for most people, but that has to be. I mean, there are all kinds of difficult shots in golf. But standing at the 18th tee with a driver or whatever he had in his hand, I don't know. Explain what that pressure is like, knowing that your world will change if you can somehow complete this rather short exercise that most often a guy like him turns into futility.
Well, I can't say that I know what that pressure is like. I wish I could. But it was impressive that everybody remembers Van de Velde in the British Open.
Sure.
The guy had however many shot lead and pulls out driver. But, you know, Lucas played the conservative route, took up whatever iron he took, just to keep himself short of the bunker on the 18th hole, and played smart. And he's 29 years old, and first time he's been in that situation where he's had the lead on the 18th hole in a major. And it was nice to see him lay up, play conservative. But as far as the pressure, I couldn't imagine. I was watching it, and I was nervous for him, and I can't imagine the pressure that he was under. But
well, let me ask you what you teach golf, and when a young player who plays junior golf asks you, Eric, I mean, I know this is kind of a loaded question, but you know, how do you deal? I mean, I know how to swing the golf club. I know how to do this. But how do you deal with pressure? Is there any easy way to do it? Because he said afterwards, Glover said, he just stayed with his pre-shot routine and blocked everything else out. And obviously that was successful. But is that basically what you're going to tell a young player?
It is, and it's so hard to do, but the number one thing is experience. I mean, if you're there over and over and over, that's the first priority, is getting there as many times as you can, because you can draw back on a lot of those things. Now, obviously, Lucas has not been in the lead on the final hole of a major, but I think I'm sure he probably reminisced of another time that he had the lead at one time or another in a tournament, and staying in your pre-shot routine, taking deep breaths, thinking about the moment at hand, which is the shot at hand. But really, the pre-shot routine is huge. And you hear it over and over, and you hear it all the time from teachers. But it's so true. If you can repeat something that you can draw back on and repeat it before you hit the shot and do it over and over, the same thing, it's just it's a lot easier to repeat when you're trying to hit the golf shot.
Eric, it's remarkable. We were 8 minutes into a conversation. We haven't mentioned Tiger Woods, but there he was again, breathing fire during this round with a shot that didn't work out. But it was a terrible tournament for Tiger Woods. He finished tied for sixth. you know, it's just
horrible.
It's just amazing. That's a career for most people. And you know, he was nowhere to be found. But I was with someone earlier on the radio this morning, and they said, why can't Tiger Woods do what he does late in the week, early in the week, and maybe kind of take us through Tiger's approach? Because he doesn't always, but lately he seems to work his way to Sunday from backwards to frontwards.
Yeah. I didn't realize Tiger was playing in this tournament. Did you, Paul?
No.
No, he what people I don't think realize is the guy was out of the game for half a year. And for him to, as talented as he is, which is it's unbelievable, he's unbelievably talented, but he's still getting his feet wet again. And I think getting, again, it goes back to that experience factor, but I'm sure he's still trying to work on some things that he and Hank Haney are still working on, and he was out of golf for 6 months, and that's a lot of time to be away from this game. I don't care who you are, and I think sometimes that shows. I mean, he hits some errant shots. I know he's driving the ball better, but it really all came down to putting for him. I mean, if he makes any kind of putts, he's right there and probably on top of the leaderboard. But for him, I think it was a week of not making putts, which it showed on television.
You know, I want to correct myself earlier. I said this was Mickelson's fourth runner-up. This is his fifth runner-up in the U.S. Open. And finally, going back to Lucas Glover, you played college golf with him. You know him. Eric, do you think that the bell goes off now, the light goes on, and this guy goes on and wins more majors, or will he be one of those one-hit wonders we talk about 20 years from now?
No, I think you'll see Lucas a lot. I think you'll see his name over and over. He works hard. He's very comfortable in his life right now, and he's just so talented. And I just think the more confidence you give him, the better he's going to be. And he can do everything really well. He's number one in driving right now, and he puts it really well. I mean, his ball striking is incredible, but I think the more confidence you give him, the more you're going to see his name over and over. And I expect big things from him. I hope so anyway, because he's a great guy.
Eric, thank you very much. We appreciate you coming on.
Paul, thanks. Enjoyed it.
You bet. Eric Williamson, who is the director of golf at Shoal Creek, played college golf with Lucas Glover. Lucas was at Clemson. Eric played also in that state, and we will talk more about that and get your phone calls here. If you had any thoughts on the golf or the weekend or anything else, you can give us a ring right now, 741-9450, 866-765-7285.
This broadcast of the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network can be heard in Spanish by utilizing the SAP button on your radio dial. Mira, Paul Feinbaum es muy bueno, eh? Yo escucho mucho Paul Feinbaum. Escucha, por favor.
No se da ni cuenta que cuando la miro por no delatarme me gusta.
We'll talk some college football later with Bruce Feldman. Probably talk college football before Bruce Feldman. Anyway, nice chat there with Eric Williamson of Shoal Creek about the U.S. Open. Well, else is going on? Love to hear from you. 741-9450. 741-9450 or 866-765-PAUL, 866-765-7285. Ken is up next. What do you say, Ken?
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum.
Hey there. What's happening?
Yes, I'm a first-time caller, but I've been listening to you for a couple of months, and I've always it's always a joy and a privilege to listen to objective opinion from the outside.
Thank you.
Concerning the LSU-Texas College World Series,
right.
Of course, I'm biased, but I want your objective view as to who's going to win and why. And my second question is, the LSU football Tigers, of course, have a new quarterback, and you saw what Jordan Jefferson done against Georgia Tech in the Georgia Dome. They got a lot of athletes coming back at their skill positions, and, of course, they have a great Ruben Randle, who's somewhat of a Julio Jones. I want your take on what you think the LSU Tigers would do and who will win the college football. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Yeah, I think LSU will beat Texas in the College World Series. I wish I could tell you why, but I don't. I don't know enough about either team. I know Texas is good. We're talking about the two best teams in the country right now, so it's self-explanatory. But I think LSU will have a really good team this year in football. I think they'll bounce back. I think LSU is Alabama's biggest competitor, frankly, for the SEC West. I buy Ole Miss as a viable team, but I see Ole Miss wasting a game somewhere down the road that you least expect it. I just don't think that program is completely ready to win an SEC West. How about Chris being next in Trustville? Hey, Chris.
Hey, Bob. I want to ask you a question, then I want to hang up and hear the answer. The article that was written about Saban complaining about recruiting and all, can you give me your spin on exactly what he was saying?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was talking to Ryan Heaney about that earlier, and I'm still not sure I understand what exactly this is about. Nick Saban, over the weekend in an article, essentially said that recruiting services are telling prospective recruits that they're giving them dirt. They're trying to poison players away from Alabama. And I'm going to throw this wide open to the callers, because I'm not completely sure I understand his point either. Do you? It sounded to me that this is standard operating procedure. Who believes that any recruiting analyst for any website has an ounce of credibility other than to try to promote their own website? I mean, just read these Auburn. I don't have to name names. I mean, just name an Auburn website, and these guys campaign and recruit and lie, beg, and steal for Auburn. And I assume the guys cover Alabama do the same thing. So since when is that a news bulletin?
Well, I mean, that's what they all do for each school, right?
Exactly.
That's part of it. But I mean, what's his beef? Who wrote the article, and what is the? Because I was confused by it. What's he trying to say? That's what
I agree. Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'm going to read the article out loud in a moment, and I'll let the audience judge, because I'm not sure. I read it quickly Saturday and just kind of shrugged my shoulders and said to myself, why are you making a big deal out of this? I mean, you're acting like Alabama, doesn't do this either. I'm glad you brought it up. That's a great point. We're going to talk about that in a minute. If you haven't read the article, I will enlighten you. If you have, I'd like you to give me a ring and get your assessment. And I don't mean to be, painting with such a broad brush, but I know for a fact that guys who own websites, I mean, this is a fact. This isn't, I heard at a bar, at a barbershop, or somewhere else. I know for a fact that guys who own websites call coaches and try to make deals with them about getting scoops on recruits. And by the way, the recruiting guy at Auburn, Alabama, Tennessee, they give the same information to all three or four websites simultaneously. But it sounds good to say you've talked to the head coach. I know Nick Saban's engaged in conversations with these guys from the website. So I found it just amusing that Nick Saban would be calling out, and obviously he's calling out Auburn or Tennessee websites to try to spin the deal against them. Anyway, we'll talk about that. You got a thought? We'd love to hear from you. Back with much, much more. we're back. This is the article from the other day. In the Birmingham News, an article by Ian Rappaport under the headline, Alabama coach Nick Saban asks recruiting sites for integrity in reporting. Why am I having a hard time with that headline? Does anyone know? Let me try it again. Do you guys know? Saban asks recruiting sites for integrity in reporting. Does he want the Alabama sites to have integrity too? And that way every kid that commits to Alabama won't be a five-star. I mean, there's no such thing, Coach Saban. There's no such thing as integrity in recruiting sites. The two just do not go hand in hand. Anyway, here's the article. Alabama coach Nick Saban and members of his staff were proactive. Prior to the penalties, Saban said he and his staff explained the various possibilities to recruits. They spoke of the probability. Now, this is interesting. Oh, this is, I forgot something. Did they do this before? So Nick Saban is now explaining the probabilities of the recruiting to recruits. Did he do the same thing while Alabama was under the official letter and while all those guys were signing back in February? Did he tell them that they were 2 weeks away from going in front of the Committee on Infraction for potential major? I mean, is this not a bunch of crap, or am I just not understanding this? Could be one of the two. Or maybe I'm just stupid as Charles from Railtown. Saban said some reporters for recruiting fan sites have been unfair in what they are telling prospects about Alabama's situation. He said that the writers have been passing on to 2010 prospects incorrect and potentially damaging information about what the sanctions mean for UA. That will be addressed by somebody and should be brought to bear, Saban said. If people are just covering recruiting with honesty and integrity, there's no problem. But all those guys that work out there for recruiting sites are for the school. Everybody roots for a team, and they get information for a team. Saban, according to this article, did not name a specific incident. And if the allegations are true, the reporters would be in violation of the rules of their own websites. Oh, my goodness. So some slappy working for, let's say, AuburnUndercover.com, just for the sake of argument, or AuburnSports.com, or WeagleWeagleWarDamnEagle.com, passes along incorrect or damaging information that they'll be sanctioned by their own website. How stupid. Okay. This article, I have to be honest with you, I didn't finish this article, and now I know why. I was laughing so hard, I think I just put the paper down. Reporters for the two leading websites, Rivals and Scout, must sign a code of ethics when they are hired as a way of ensuring a reporter signing a code of ethics? Wow. Saban's remarks sent the companies scurrying as they attempted to find them. Remember, who was that guy we had on a couple years ago? The owner of Rivals.com is like the biggest Alabama fan in the world. What was that guy's name? Oh, Shannon Terry. He's the head of Rivals. He's like he's posting garbage on his own website. So are his reporters going to be called in to the office of the president of Rivals? I don't even know if he's still there anymore. Because they may have passed along some misleading information. Anyway, am I not understanding? Forgot the big part of the article. Big part of the article. Saban said, Saban said he's asking the NCAA for help. Does anyone understand this? Is this Nick Saban like Whistling by the Graveyard or something? You don't think he influences? Well, maybe not directly. You don't think people on Nick Saban's staff influence the guys who cover Alabama for whatever website? What's that thing called, Tider Insider? That's an objective website? I mean, go on Tider Insider and criticize Alabama football, and you're liable to get a life sentence. I mean, you get kicked off the site in 3 minutes. Now, of course, you go on there and criticize me, you'll get like a 3 years membership. Anyway, Puff Daddy is next.
How's it going, Paul?
Hey there, man.
Hey, I was like you, I was scratching my head when I first read that. Then come Sunday, I got the gist of it. It's called the psychology that he's using. Because, you know, yesterday he didn't they announce a couple of recruits for the 2011 season, and then one or two for the 2010 season.
And they got four for the 2017 season.
Yeah. So I think it's all just psychology deal. He said, like, they got here riding around in their limousines and throwing toilet paper up in trees, and he sat back and get everybody scratching their head and talking about it like we're doing right now, and then he throws out a couple of days later, well, here's your four recruits or whatever, you know, and you see what you can do with that. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I think that's, you know, I'd say, this is just my imagination, but I would say that Nick Saban has a specific reporter in mind, and I'm betting that he works for an Auburn website, don't you?
Yeah.
And we will out that guy in a few minutes.
I think that's another thing. I think he's wanting somebody else to do the outing.
Yeah. Well, he's come to the right place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Have a good day, bud. All right. Bye-bye.
He's come to the right place. But, you know, that's – I mean, the person he's talking about, though, has no credibility anyway. I mean, everyone knows he's a fraud. So I don't know why he's going to the press. And there must, I mean, you think maybe there's a method to his madness. I don't know what it is. Let's ask the poet laureate of Real Town, Alabama.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon.
I called you, Tom.
I know.
You don't care, do you?
I really don't.
You're probably proud to be called Charles.
I'd be proud, yeah. How you doing, Charles?
Huh?
How are you?
Been all right.
Been a while since we talked.
Yeah, it's been a while, ain't it?
It sure has.
Forgot your dad blame names been so long.
Well, we worked it out. We Alex told me that they had the South Central guy or the Bell South guy in here today, and we made sure this line's going to work.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Okay, because we would not want to miss another week of Charles from Real Town.
I don't say how you said it last week.
Hmm. Got away with it.
The listeners out there, they was wanting to hear from me. Well, let it go. That's over with. But that's his mode of operation, Paul.
Who's that?
Nick Saban. That's his mode of operation. And honesty and integrity in recruiting? You kidding me? This coming from a coach at a school that's been put on probation again and is back under the window of repeat violator status?
Mm-hmm.
Honesty and integrity coming from Nick Saban? Boy, that's laughable.
It is pretty funny. I have to agree with you, Charles.
But, you know, he's going to put the... put the blame on everybody. He put the Sugar Bowl loss on the fan.
Yeah, he did.
He's just blaming everybody. He's not going to ever accept responsibility for anything negative. And that's just arrogance. And the Alabama fans, they so arrogant that they don't care. As long as he wins, they don't care if they embarrassed, lose, or put on probation. I mean, you know, just so they can go for that 8th national championship. That's all I care about.
13th.
Huh?
13th.
Oh, you know that's wrong. Look at the NCAA record book. Will you do that for me? See how many they say they got? 7.
Okay.
Well, anyway, you know, it's just that arrogance. Isn't it? He fits in perfect with Alabama because he's arrogant, they arrogant, and it beats all I ever seen. And Auburn, they ain't that way. They're going to try to do things the right way, hard work. But anyway, you know, it's the same old thing. It never ends at Alabama. This arrogance it's got to stop. And, you know, they still appeal to sanctions
and they got a slap on the hand. There's that arrogance for you again. You know, there's still allegations out there, but they still arrogant. There ain't none out there according to them. May not be, but they ain't. So, you know, it's I don't understand it. I really don't. I mean, but I know one thing. He's going to come back and bite him one of these days, and old Charles down here in real time will be laughing his head off.
Gotcha, Charles. Really good to hear from you again, as always. John is next. Yeah, that line keeps dropping. How about this, John? Hey, John.
Hey, Paul. How's it going, man?
It's going great. How are you?
My one call every 90 days that you allow me, and I have to follow him.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'll remember. I'm going to remember. Hey, look. I read the article. I think the problem that you're having, and not, you know, I know you pretty well. I think the thing that you're having is the word integrity being used in the article.
Yeah, I am having a problem with that.
The integrity of that involving maybe Coach Saban, because after all, since he's had two rule changes since he's been at Alabama, one for the bump rule and one for the using the webcam. But that's irrelevant. What I can say personally from personal experience is I read just about 99% of the Auburn's paraphernalia at the websites, and I have never seen but one writer in an article over the last 6 or 8 months say anything about Alabama's recruiting, about their problems and their articles they wrote. In fact, they rarely ever mention Alabama and most of the guys that write.
Which website are we talking about?
AuburnSports.com, Inside Auburn Tigers. Now, okay. I'm not going to say anything about
Remember, but John, remember, the allegation here is not what they have written, it's what they're telling recruits.
Well, okay, so you think that in his article he's saying that Jeff or Brian or some of your guys, Mark, is calling these recruits up and talking to the recruits and saying, well, you know that this is going to happen.
Well, listen, I don't, a friend of mine has told me, and I'm not going to mention the guy's name, one of the allegations, according to some people, is this, that a particular reporter, editor, writer, whatever, has told some recruits that Alabama was facing serious sanctions. Now, again, why a recruit would take someone seriously, I don't know. Why Saban would react, I don't know, but that's what we're talking about.
Well, I think that a solid recruit that is listening to Coach Saban or Coach Chizik, any of those coaches, they're going to listen to them before they go. They're going to listen to
Marshall. I agree. I agree with you on that.
The whole problem that I saw with that article when I read it was, and maybe I read it wrong, a little biased, but I thought that Coach Saban was whining in the article.
John, we agree.
And here's
why. Maybe I know too much, but I know, I'm going to be careful what I say, but I know how, I've seen the inner workings of these websites, okay?
Right.
And I happen to be privy to the underbelly of one in particular at one point in time, and I don't think they're credible. I think for Saban to be calling out an Auburn website is pretty humorous, considering that the one I saw the underbelly of happened to be an Alabama website.
Yeah, you're right. I agree with you, but anyway, I thought it was a very good article. Did you enjoy the Open?
The Open of the article?
The U.S. Open.
Oh, I sure did. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Did anything in particular stand out with you today?
Now, again, I was watching it while I was at lunch, so it was.
Yeah.
I was not. No.
When Phil missed that par putt and went to the bogey and failed, that was a turning point for him. He had that. I think he could have won it if he had.
I agree with you on that. I left my house when he made the eagle, and I put it on the radio, and I said, "This guy hasn't won." And the last thing I heard was. He was on the green, and I walked into the restaurant, and he had bogeyed, and I kind of felt like it was all over at that point. You're right. You're absolutely right about that. And it's, I hate to compare him to this guy, although there's a Greg Norman quality to Phil Mickelson, which is hard to understand. This, he could have won this tournament. Nobody stole it from him. Nobody, you know, hit a putt at the final hole. I think if he had stayed four under, Lucas Glover would have caved in.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, Paul, as always, it's been my pleasure. Be good. Talk to you later.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
F-Bomb is ready to take on the world. More of Feinbaum coming up.
AM in Birmingham is next.
Mr. Feinbaum.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir. I got something for you, Mr. Feinbaum.
Great.
2 weeks from now, the United States Navy have a conflict with North Korea Navy ship.
Okay.
North Korea responded by letting 3 missiles go, 2 in the South Korea, 1 in Japan. The United States responded by having a bomb base Japan go in and invade. And I think Iran people would take over in the next 2 weeks. And I have one more thing. I've been telling you this. 2011, Nick Saban would be gone too. I told you. During my time, Paul.
Where's he going?
In my time, Paul, I ain't seen him. And go on probation. I told you I started watching football with Van Tiffany keeping it go. They ain't nothing but a bunch of cheeks. And I want to say one more thing. I really listen to Charles, then that writer from Tuscaloosa, all the time. I think he make your show boring.
You don't like Cecil?
I don't like Cecil. Period. Garbage.
He's the number one guest we have.
Oh, no, he ain't nothing. And then one more thing, Paul. Tell me, what's worse, 36-0 or 11 sacks in one game?
That's pretty funny. Hey, thank you, Cam. You got it. How about PJ in Mobile? Hello, PJ.
Hey, Pop.
What's happening?
As an Alabama fan, there's 2 things I'd like to know. It's what the women want and what the Saban want. But I think what Nick Saban is doing is just a Nick Saban way to come out and let the recruits know that nothing's really happening at Alabama and not to worry about it. But he just took it out on the media like he always does. If nothing else, it gave you something to talk about this week, didn't it?
Well, that is true.
But, I'm not reading too much into it. I mean, I read the article myself, and I just thought it was kind of a ridiculous rant. But I think it's his way of letting the recruits know that nothing more is going to come of it, kind of ease their minds. Also, I had when did the official polls come out for the preseason?
Well, the first one will likely come out probably late July. I think that's when the USA Today poll comes out, late July, early August.
Okay, and then Virginia Tech, they're pretty much saying they're going to be a top 10 team, correct?
Yeah, everyone's picking Virginia Tech in the top 10.
Now, they were 8-4 last year in the ACC, and to come in this year as a top 10 team, that seems a little overrated, doesn't it?
Well,
I'm asking your opinion.
I'm not. You know, Virginia Tech's to me a team that just never quite finishes the deal. People that know football, and again, you know, we'll have one on in a couple hours. Who's an ESPN expert? They all like Virginia Tech. They think. Remember one thing though, PJ. You know who the hot team in the country was a year ago? Clemson. So that's why I don't put a lot of stock in the Virginia Tech hype. Clemson was a top 10 team, and Alabama destroyed them. They had to fire the coach midseason. So do I think Virginia Tech's a little better than that? Yes, but I think Alabama has the better team. We'll take a short break. More of your phone calls, 741-9450 and 866-765-PAUL. We're back after this.
Log on to Feinbaum.com for show podcasts, interviews, and Paul's latest columns. Feinbaum.com. Log on to Feinbaum.com for show podcasts, interviews, and Paul's latest columns. Feinbaum.com.
The enemy over there. They're not your friends. You don't go over there and shake hands, smile, hug their neck.
Let's knock them on their backs, butt them in the mouth, knock their ass in the dirt. That's what we got to do.
We got to stop that buddy ball. Smash everybody in the mouth. Take the running backs to the stands. Run up in the stands and slap their mama.
legends are made, and most college football coaches fired. The Deep South's leading opinion maker, the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network. Today's headlines to tomorrow's top stories. This is the South's most listened to and credible source for sports, the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network. To be part of the program, call 741-1005 or toll free at 1-877-569-1005 or email the show at feinbaumnet@yahoo.com. Now, named by Sports Illustrated as one of America's top 12 sports shows, the South Sports Authority, Paul Feinbaum.
Good afternoon. Welcome in. What should be a very interesting and informative show. A great loss overnight to the Alabama area. Burt Bank, a radio pioneer, a former state senator, the man who created what is now the Crimson Tide Sports Radio Network, and who was a radio station owner, passed away at the age of 94 years old. He was a genuine American hero. We've had many, many discussions up here with Burt Bank, and we will listen to some of those conversations during this program today. We'll also talk to friends of Burt Bank and people that he meant so much to, and we'll get your reaction as well to this genuine American hero. We begin tonight by talking to someone who spent a lot of time around Burt. Ronnie Quarles runs the radio station in Tuscaloosa that Burt founded, WTBC, and is a friend of ours of many years as well. And I know this has been a very busy and very trying day. And Ronnie, we deeply appreciate you making time for us. I hope Paul as well.
Well, hello, Paul. Yes, it's, as you can imagine, we've had several calls today, and several of Burt's friends come through the office today, and just want to, actually, we've got a kind of a wall of old photographs of Burt that people have been reminiscing over this afternoon, and it's just been a day that, you know, we knew it was going to come, and we just kind of didn't realize it was going to come this quick, but here we are, and it's been a shock to us all that I got the call this morning, and here we are right now, looking back on a past and remembering him in fondness, and his he had a great life, so we're not really mourning his death, but we're kind of celebrating all the things that he did.
And Cecil Hurt called me early this morning to let me know about the news and said that he had seen Burt not that long ago. I mean, I know Burt had an office down the hall from you. Had he been sick in recent days, or what happened?
Well, I talked to Jimmy, his son, and Burt had been bedridden for a while now, but his mind was sharp as a tack, and he was asking for people to come by and visit with him. And, you know, up until just recently, he was in the old Burt. He just his body kind of gave out on him. But he was still, you know, as wise and as a wise cracker, I guess you could say, as he's been for quite a while. But, yeah, we had an office for him. We kept an office for him up here at WTBC in the studios for as long as he wanted it. And about a year and a half ago, he couldn't make the drive over here, and he decided that he wanted to give his office up. So that ended about a year and a half ago.
Well, Ronnie, and thanks to you, we had a couple of very memorable conversations with Burt on this program. But let's talk a little bit about the radio part of his career, because we're going to play some cuts later on about his time in a Japanese prison camp. Uh-huh. He was on the death march to Bataan, as many know. Go back, because Burt, I think, was a lawyer by trade, wasn't he?
Yeah, Burt graduated from the University Law School here at Alabama in 1940, but you really wouldn't know it. He never really discussed that part of his education with any of the employees, I don't think. Anyway, and looking back on it, talking to the guys that used to work for him, Burt was a rough businessman that kids like me, when I started working for him back in 1973, we kind of shy. When he was in the building, we went into the closet. we hid as much as we can, but as he got older, he mellowed. and was a wonderful person to be around. But looking back on his early career, he had a cinder block building on 15th Street here in Tuscaloosa. We called the 15th Street School of Broadcasting. and it was just hundreds. I've never counted them up, but hundreds, if not thousands, of people he touched through that cinder block building went into the broadcasting business or related fields, and they're everywhere as we speak today. You know, I had a long conversation with James Spann this morning. He and I were hired at about the same time back in 73 by Bert, and he just touched a lot of lives in the radio business to this day. And, you know, up until about a year ago, we were still having ex-alumni come through here who just wanted to see the place. Of course, we're not in the Central Block building anymore.
No.
But they wanted to come back and kind of relive the old days of WTBC. So, John Cochran with ABC News is a 15th Street School of Broadcasting alumni, and Dave Baird. Just goes on and on as far as the number of people that he touched. And I started in this business with Burt Bank at WTBC, and now here I am at WTBC later in life. So I've kind of come full circle.
Well, he told me, I'm trying to remember, what got him into it, but I mean, he was obviously very close friends with Paul Bryant, and
yep.
He made this decision. You probably know the story a lot better than I do. I'm struggling to remember what Bert told me over the years, but he, at some point, they decided to start this network. What do you remember, if you remember very much at all about how that came about?
I really don't remember a whole lot about him starting the network other than he just told me that it was in its infancy, as were all radio networks back then. This was uncharted territory, and when they started it, it hit the ground running. It became a huge success, and I think a lot of other schools across the country modeled their radio networks after what Coach Bryant and Mr. Bank did here in Tuscaloosa. So it was kind of the starting point for a lot of radio networks. I do know that when we worked back in the early 70s at the station, we had a who's who of Alabama sports figures walking through the station at any given moment. I personally sat down and did interviews with Joe Namath and people like that would come over and do little snippets for the Saturday show the coaches' shows that ran before the broadcast. So it was a lot of fun working at the station back then. What a lot of high pay now. Don't get me wrong, but it was a lot of fun.
You know, Ronnie, I do remember Bert telling me one story that I think is worth repeating, and it probably has not been repeated very often on this day because we think of Bert so much on two fronts on his time of service. And of the Alabama connection, but he told me one time that he was the first white radio station owner in Alabama to put a black DJ on the air. This was in the late 50s, and I'll never forget because I wrote an article about this. He said a bunch of advertisers threatened to cancel, and Bert said, "Listen, go ahead, and I will publish your names in the newspaper if you do."
He's told me that story several times. He was proud of the fact that he broke that barrier in the radio business. And the guy was good. He was a great employee and a good on-air person. And Bert was, against all odds, made that decision, and it became a successful decision. But he was very proud that he did that. And he told me that story several times.
Well, it's just again, Ronnie. I mean, I know you've had serious issues. Everyone either has or knows someone who's had serious health issues. At 94, he lived an incredible life.
Oh, unbelievable! I remember a few years back, we gave him a surprise birthday party up here, and it just meant the world to him that we all gathered around him. And I think it was his 91st or 92nd birthday. And it just meant so much to him. And I remember I was thinking about it this morning. He didn't want to shake the guy's hands. All he wanted to do was hug and kiss the girls.
Well, he did. You know, I think you know the story a lot better than I do. But his wife of many, many years, obviously maybe a half a century, died. And didn't tell the story about he met back up with one of his high school girlfriends. Is that, do I remember the story correctly or not?
Yeah, he did, and ended up marrying her. And Bert was he was somewhat of a ladies' man.
His one of his best friends was Coach Bryant. So
that's true. He liked to go out and have a good time. You're right. Absolutely. I remember he liked to tell the story as far as back in the old radio days. People would say, "Well, Bert, why did you pay me minimum wage?" And Bert would always come back and say, "Because I had to." So that's the kind of guy we were working with. And gosh, you know, through the years, especially when the Ghost Soldiers story came out by Hampton Sides,
right?
A lot of people traveled all across the country and would come into the studio here in Tuscaloosa and ask to see Bert and to have that book signed by Bert. And you know, I'm kind of jumping around here, but that kind of meant a lot to him that people thought enough of him that they would drive all the way from Montana to have a book signed that he was featured in.
Well, Ronnie, I look forward to seeing you again. We sit practically next to each other during the Alabama football games. It's always great to catch up. You've been a great friend of this program's, and I can't thank you enough on what I know is a very difficult day to share these memories.
He was, you know, an astute, very good business operator. He was a patriot, and just one of those guys. He was an individual. I said this morning he was an individual in a time of unusual individuals that we just don't see anymore in this day and time. And we were. I'm happy to have been associated with him, as is everybody here at the station.
Ronnie, our best, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you very much.
Okay, Paul. Talk to you later.
Ronnie Quarles, a good friend of ours, been an affiliate of ours for many, many years in Tuscaloosa at WTBC, the station that Bert once owned. And again, if you're just joining us and wondering what is going on, we're talking about the death of Bert Bank today, who was a great patriot. He survived the Bataan Death March, spent 33. Think about how hot you are right now sitting in traffic. Think about how difficult it is on a 100-degree day in Alabama. Bert Bank spent 33 months as a prisoner of war during World War II in Japan, of the Japanese. We'll talk about this as the show goes on. We have a couple of cuts from an interview we did with Bert not that long ago that we'll share with you. And if you have your own memory of the man who started the Alabama Radio, the Alabama Crimson Tide Sports Network, and was the executive producer emeritus through his final day yesterday. We would love to hear from you. 741-9450-866-765-7285. We're back after this.
It's lonely at the top, but the food is much better. Keep your dial locked on Feinbaum, the Paul Feinbaum Radio Network.
Let's get some phone calls here as we start this show off. Tom, you're up. How are you?
Fine. How you doing?
Doing great, Tom. Thank you.
I'd just like to share a memory I had of Bert Banks.
Sure, absolutely.
I grew up in Tuscaloosa and was working at the local Sears store when it was downtown. This must have been back in 1951 or 52. And that makes me an old man, Paul.
That's okay. You're still around.
But anyway, Mr. Bert came in. We had the community chest. We called it community chest drive back then. Now they call it United Way, I believe now. But anyway, he came in and made a pep talk to us so we might donate to the community, you know. Told us about his death march in Bataan. And, he was just a very likable person, very dominating, very strong voice. And over the years, I had a lot of contacts with him on buying advertising on WTBC. And we moved out on Hackberry Lane as a new Sears store. We saw a lot of him. But then the last time I saw Mr. Burton, and I'll get off, was my wife Pat and I went to the Liberty Bowl game in 1982. And that's the last game Bear Bryant played.
Sure was.
Coached. And we were walking in. We got there a little early, and we like to froze to death that night. It was cold in Memphis.
It was really cold.
But anyway, we walked. Mr. Burke come in, and first time I'd seen him in years. I'd left Tuscaloosa, and we had a real nice chat with him, and it was good to see him. But that was the last time I saw him. Just wanted to share that
Thank
with you.
Thank you very much. Good to hear from you. It's interesting how we were talking about John Forney yesterday, of course, and John, of course, spent many years with Burt Bank, and we'll talk more about Burt and John later on with some other people who were part of that broadcast team. We're getting your phone calls right now, and the phone number is 741-9450-866-765-PAUL. Ground Chuck in Tuscaloosa, you're next. How are you?
Hey, Paul, I've met you a time or two down in Destin to some of the SEC meetings.
Sure.
But what I was going to tell you is Mr. Bank used to also own Southern Beverage Company here in Tuscaloosa.
Did he really?
He had a beer and wine distributorship. But anyway, we'd go to a Christmas party up at his house, and Jack Marshall, that owned several Kentucky Fried Chicken outlets, was one of his neighbors up at Burnt Pines on Lake Tuscaloosa, and he'd come play the piano for us without plenty of wine and beer. And all the employees brought food. By 9 or 9:30, here comes Bert out in his pajamas, and that's how he let you knew it was time to go home. You know, if you went to a party at his house, you better have fun fast, because he was going to let you know when it was time to go
that's
home.
That's fun. That's a great story.
All right. See you later, Paul.
Nice of you to call. Thanks. Appreciate it. Jack is next. Hello, Jack.
Hey, Paul.
What's happening?
I had the pleasure of knowing Bert's son, Jim.
Jimmy, yeah.
We went to high school together in Memphis. And I met Mr. Bank several times, and I don't know if you're familiar with the book you read on the Death March, on the Death March.
I sure am.
It's a great book, and if anybody wants to know what kind of patriot that gentleman was, read the book.
I'm proud to have a signed copy that Bert gave me one night, and, we're not going to do justice to it today, Jack, just playing a little bit, because... When you sit back and listen to Bert talk about that, it will change you in many ways.
Yes, it will. But anyway, condolences to the family, and we'll be thinking about you, Jim, if you're listening. I know he's coming to town, but
thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, son has been involved in Major League Baseball for many, many years. And again, if you're just getting off work or getting in your car, Bert passed away last night. He grew up in Montgomery, and of course he. Family moved to Tuscaloosa. He went to elementary and high school there, went to the university, and graduated from the law school in 1940. And, you know, he did what he did like everyone else did back then. He went to a war. He was captured. We talked about that story with him a couple of times when he was up here during extended conversations. He ended up spending 33 months in prison camp, was on the epic death march to Bataan, and finally was liberated. And it's one of the things that we will talk to him about. Well, listen back to what he told us in a couple of minutes. Other guests as well today, we'll talk to Mike Hubbard in a couple of minutes, who used to run the, still does, he's the executive producer of the Auburn Network, about getting to know Bert, and maybe talk a little bit about how Bert really set the model. I mean, these networks now are commanding millions and millions and millions of dollars, and Bert may have been the originator of that through his great friendship with Paul Bryan. And I said this earlier, I think the idea of him employing the first black DJ at a white station is something that should not be forgotten about or missed. Come on, give us a ring. We'd love to hear from you. We'll broaden the subject a little bit later, a couple of special guests as well. If you knew Mr. Bank, certainly we'd love to hear from you at 741-9450 and 866-765-7285. Much more to come. We've only just begun on this Tuesday afternoon. Back to memories of Bert Bank from some of you out there in just a moment, but we want to welcome Representative Mike Hubbard to our program. Representative Hubbard represents House District 79 down in the Auburn-Opelika area. But Newbird Bank, from his many, many years and still his still heavy involvement as the president of the Auburn Network, which is now owned by ISP. Mike, appreciate you coming on, and it's good to hook up with you again. Thanks for being with us, and I know that you knew Burt Bank very well.
I sure did, Paul, and it's great to be on the show, and I appreciate you having me. And I tell you, we've lost a great man and a true American hero. And you're right, I did know Mr. Bank, and you know, he really was a pioneer in the sports broadcast network business and in broadcasting period. And he was also a state senator, so I had a lot in common with him, both in the legislature and in broadcasting. But I tell you what, I have a lot of admiration for him, and and I really cherish. He gave me one of his books, you know, about the Bataan Death March, and signed it for me, and that's one of my most cherished possessions.
Well, I want to ask you about the business aspect of it, because the company that now that you're affiliated with, others in this business as well, this is no longer mom and pop, which it was with Bird, and maybe even a mild degree when you first got into it. It's,
right.
It's big business, and I think Bert, you know it better than I do, was at the front line of this, wasn't he?
He was. I mean, really, like I said.